Norm's Conceptual Corner.
Well, top of the morning to everybody. This is Norm's Conceptual Corner, and we are continuing the Philosophy of Religion series. Today's episode will be on the cosmological argument. And the cosmological argument, like most philosophy of religion arguments, is going to get weird. So here we go again. And I'm with the usual suspects, the whole team here today. We've got Brittany Rose now.
Hey, morning.
And we've got Chalmer Wren, remote.
Hello.
With some occasional outdoor sounds. Awesome.
And I'm recording in God's beautiful, beautiful creation.
Absolutely.
It's how can you not see a miracle in every tree?
Absolutely. Only God can make a tree. Mm-hmm. Well, that and other trees. But anyways, that's technicality. And Nick Arcus.
It's cosmological.
So, yes, cosmological. Let's get right into this. What's stopping us? Nothing. Cosmological argument is this kind of brand of argument that it gets very philosophically deep, but also resonates with people's common sense. So as far as the common sense version of this argument, and I'd like to hear you guys' thoughts on this too. For me, the way that, you know, people, non-philosophers, bring up the cosmological argument, maybe even without realizing it, is when they, you know, see some beautiful scene, like Chalmer was kidding around about, and they say, you know, all of this must have had a beginning. Something must have put all this here.
Well, it appeals to your notion of cause and effect.
Right.
It's also, I would say, just in debating with people, this is probably the most popular argument that I hear. It's usually the first one that comes up.
I personally think the teleological argument is more common, but depending on who you're talking to, I don't find it surprising that you would think that the cosmological argument is they're kind of neck and neck.
Yeah,
I hear this one bundled with the fine tuning a lot.
Yeah, which is a different argument. They sound the same, but they're not the same. So, you know, we're going to get to the fine-tuning later. The fine-tuning argument is not so much that everything had a beginning. It's why is the universe the way it is? And, you know, some people don't see those subtleties or they muddle the arguments together, and that's okay.
I kind of feel like a lot of these arguments build on each other. So, like, whereas we did, like, the ontological weirdness last time, I feel like they kind of use that to move into the cosmological argument as far as who this, you know, this uncaused causes.
Oh yeah,
they kind of that's the
it's
nature
kind of
religion.
Built on that. So sure. Like, you know, it's built on kind of a house of mad cards, I guess. But
yes. Mm-hmm. And it when you hear that version, it feels like a trick, just like the ontological argument felt.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah. Let's just start like getting the ball rolling. This is going to turn out to be funny.
Uh-huh.
Retroactively.
Yep.
by looking at the first version of this argument, the first version of this argument is based on motion. So the thing is that kind of the father of the cosmological argument would be Thomas Aquinas. He's got a set of argument called the Five Ways, where he talks about a variety of things that need something to get them going. And one of them is motion. And so here's the basic, you know, version of this in terms of the cosmological argument. There are things in the universe that are in motion that cannot move themselves. That would be any non-life, right? So let's just indulge the argument for a minute. What are some things that are in motion that are not living? Well, there's
planets,
there's wind,
electrons,
sure. Lots of stuff, right? Rocks rolling down hills, probably right now here in Colorado.
Hmm.
And somebody running.
I'm listening for Chalmer.
Gathering no mouse.
I'm here.
So things are in motion that did not move themselves. Well, that means they were moved by something else. But then that would just shift that problem back a step. What moved that thing? Well, something else. Something else ran into it, right?
Some kind of infinite regress going on here.
Exactly. Yeah. And an infinite regress doesn't make sense. We want to avoid an infinite regress. So what we learn from that is that there must be a something that moves other things that it itself was not moved. Right? Mm-hmm. This is the concept of a prime mover, something that is getting the motion going. And what's interesting is, you know, for engineers, when they talk about, like, designing devices, they talk about a prime mover. And that, mm-hmm. that would be the motor of the device. So, you know, if you've got a cordless drill, the prime mover is the electric motor in the drill. The car, everything that gets everything in motion, well, that's the engine itself. That's the prime mover. So that's the version of the cosmological argument based on motion. And it sounds like it makes perfect sense, doesn't it?
No.
It doesn't?
No, because there's potential energy in everything, and it can at any point be transferred to kinetic energy. So
right.
the fact that we need a mover, that's just transfer of energy. It's not, you know, that's gravity.
Right.
There's nothing, there's no guy pushing the planets around the sun. It's just.
That's an interesting concept. Gravity. If you have two objects of mass near each other in perfect stillness with space between them, they will start to move.
Right.
And there's no one pushing it. There's no outside force. It's those two. And it's just a kinetic energy situation.
How did those objects... I'm gonna put on the religious dude's hat, by the way. I'm going to try to challenge you guys. Okay. How did those two objects get there?
Probably formation through also gravity. If we're talking about two planets...
Right.
So this is
colliding
the,
materials in
the second
cosmos.
Part of the cosmological argument.
Well, yeah, but mm-hmm. you know, in order for those two things to be moved by gravity, they had to be moved to those positions, correct?
Right.
So you haven't solved the problem. Neither of you have solved the problem. You've just given an explanation for that motion. You mm-hmm. haven't given an explanation for what. Like created that circumstance to begin with.
Infinite chance collision.
Because some people will say, like, why,
infinite
like,
chance.
How the gravity
well, just
get
because
there?
They're in a vacuum of space with particles colliding into other particles. Eventually,
right.
a planet is formed. I mean, that's factually how it happens.
How right. the particles get into that configuration?
Additional gravity, because everything's going to form a sphere because of how the nature of gravity.
Yeah, gravity is created by mass.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Here's
so,
what the theists will say. They'll say, we're talking about something coming from nothing. So
yeah.
you're saying, like, gravity is doing it. They'll say, how did gravity get there? Like how did the
yeah.
concept of anything get there?
Yeah, and just to be technical, you really can't say that because gravity is a force. It's
yeah.
a force that is tied to, you know, matter.
But
so
I,
you really want to talk about the matter being there, not the force.
But I see how – sorry, the force. I see how Nick – because that's probably where this argument would end up going.
Yes.
What's gravity? Maybe God is gravity.
Yes.
So
I think that the best way, and this is probably what you were saying,
mm-hmm.
I think that the best way to get past the motion version is to acknowledge that, you know, Einstein solved this a long time ago when he said that motion is relative and there really is no rest frame in the universe. So to
yeah.
say that everything is in motion is actually the same as saying that everything is at rest. If something is at rest, then you don't feel the need to explain its motion because it's not moving. But technically, everything and nothing is moving.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not a good version of the argument.
No.
But the causal version is legit. So what caused that thing to be? So here's how they get you into the bit of, you know, cognitive trouble. They start out with the idea that every event or thing has a cause. It would, if you're willing to accept that things don't have a cause, then you are going to live in an extremely weird universe. And you know what they, one of the analogies I've heard, and I've used it on the show before, but it would be, you know, imagine where you're looking right now, a ham sandwich just appearing. You know, on top of freaking out and wondering what the fuck is going on here.
I would be confused, but I would be full.
Right. But you would not accept that there was nothing caused that to be there. You would be wondering, well, how did this get here? And even if the cause is weird, right, aliens beamed it there or whatever, there would be some cause. There was some causal connection to what got there. You would not be satisfied with there being no causal connection at all, right?
Well, Norm,
right.
It's a brand new particle, the ham sandwich particle. It pops in and out of existence.
Sure. Yeah, and you know, I know at the quantum level, the particles are supposed to do this, but that doesn't actually solve anything because those particles correspond to other particles, and you would still ask, well, how did those get there?
Yeah,
right. So their behavior is one thing. What is causing them to be is another.
Well, and even if you use that, you would still. Someone could still appeal to the idea, well, where did the medium in which they pop into and out of existence come from?
Right.
Where did the, you know,
the string,
where did the
if
fields
you will.
Come from?
Sure.
Yeah. Where did space come from?
Right.
Yeah.
And so if you want to think about this conceptually, there are two things going on here. One is this is a reference to a concept called the principle of sufficient reason. The principle of sufficient reason is basically the idea that things need an explanation. Even if you don't know the explanation, it doesn't make sense to say that things can happen or things can come in, can be, exist, and it be satisfactory that they be completely unexplained. Lots of people have talked about this. The idea was invented by both Spinoza and Leibniz. And the idea that all the things around us, all the things that are happening, all the things that exist have to have some sort of explanation. But conceptually, this will create an infinite regress if the thing that explains them itself needs an explanation. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
No matter whether you're talking about causality of the thing existing or causing that event to happen. There's a lot
Richard
of background
Dawkins
noise.
Primary,
what is going on here?
God in the God delusion.
I was almost losing it.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of background stuff. What's happening?
Were you moving around, Trauma?
Yeah, I'm not anymore, though.
Okay. Did it involve farm animals?
No.
Okay, not this time. Cool.
No, there's no farm animals out here.
Okay.
There's just house animals.
Okay.
That he's the prime mover of this episode.
Yeah, well, you were saying this reminds you of Dawkins?
So in The God Delusion, Richard Dawkins' primary argument against God is the infinite regress.
Mm-hmm.
He brings up the uncaused cause all the time.
Yeah, that's stupid. I'm sorry. That's not his finest moment.
Yeah.
Because that's not solving anything. He's going to have to say that, you know, either God is the uncaused cause or whatever started the Big Bang is an uncaused cause or an infinite regress. And an infinite regress means that you have a universe in which a being could possibly exist that whole time. And if not, then God could just be the uncaused cause. So either way, it doesn't solve the problem.
Right.
It just ends the argument. I think he was just done.
Yeah. I've had enough of this.
Dawkins found it very compelling. Other than that, the book has some interesting stuff in it. But
yeah. Oh, no, it's a great book. But that's not, yeah, that doesn't, I'm sorry. That one goes to the theist. That doesn't work. So the principle of sufficient reason says that everything has to have a cause or explanation. It's not going to be satisfactory that we, you know, look at these things and can attribute no cause or explanation to them. But that would lead to an infinite regress of causes. And that is not satisfactory either. So it makes sense that something would get it all going. And we have a name for that thing. We call that God.
Now, do you think that this presupposes that the thing that got it going has to be a being?
That's something that is debated. From their perspective, it makes sense that it would be a being because in our experience, non-persons don't cause motion. They don't cause things to happen. They respond.
Yeah, because when we were thinking of examples of things that don't move on their own, we're thinking of non-living things, inanimate objects.
I don't think I am going to edit this. I think we're going to air out the fact that Chalmer is moving around and opening and closing doors.
One door opens, another closes.
Yes.
Yeah, the cats got out. I was trying to get him back inside.
Who let the cats out?
Who? Meow. 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 Meow.
Oh, there we go.
Worth it.
I think it was just Nick's reaction that got me. Chalmers, stop opening doors. You bring me my chapstick. Okay, sorry. Back
next,
on track.
Next time we should have Chalmer here so that Nick and I can trade turns, like one holding, one hitting.
next time I will be on site.
Sounds good.
I will not be a part of the violence.
I'm penciling that in right now.
That's a pen, man.
I know where you work.
That's commitment.
So, okay. All right, where were we? Something talking is causing us.
There is a being presupposed. You said that's part of it.
Yeah, and look, I think on that one, it kind of makes some sense, actually. You know, things don't... The things in the universe that we know of that make things happen, if, you know... I shouldn't say the universe, because the universe would translate to God. So, mm-hmm. Let's say that in our experience on this planet, the things that make things happen... And the things that respond to things happening, well, it's pretty clear that the things that make things happen are animals. Mm-hmm. And the things that respond to things happening are, you know, just matter. Now, I guess the exception to that would be, you know, the forces of the earth.
Weather.
See, that's where I was going with it.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
like, think of the Grand Canyon. A river carved it. It didn't have an intention. It just, that's how gravity and, you know, the motion of water through the rock worked.
Right. I will say that there is something appealing to the idea that if you're going to go back to the beginning and determine that something caused it, that it's appealing that it would be a person as opposed to nothing. Because all things considered equal, to get things started, I think that, you know, you could lean toward which could it be? Which is more likely?
You say it would be more appealing for it to be an intelligence of some sort?
No,
I would find that
terrifying.
Yeah, disquieting.
Why?
Disturbing.
Why?
Then you're, to me, it almost reduces all of existence to a test tube baby.
Oh, you know? Yeah. Well, we're not anywhere near there. We're not talking about the nature of that being at all. We're just talking about a personality or not personality.
Yeah.
And here's another line of reasoning that they would say. You know, a universe that ends up making intelligence and the complexity of intelligence, doesn't it make sense that what would get all that going would be at least as intelligent? It's weird to think that, you know, all things being equal, it's weirder to think that intelligence would come from non-intelligence than intelligence would come from another form of intelligence. And again, on that one, I kind of am sympathetic to that reasoning.
You know, there's something else Dawkins said that resonates with me on this. He's talked about how, you know, if you're going to have, like, the universe, and he keys it into evolution and how you have evolution starting with very simple things moving towards the spectrum to something complex.
Right.
And so the universe in its most basic form that we can think of, with, like, in terms of where the Big Bang would have started, was very simple as far as what was there, just like, you know, hydrogen and some helium and maybe some lithium.
Right.
So from that, you eventually, through, you know, natural processes of evolution, get to something as complex as us.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're talking about an emergent property.
So. But he's saying that, but I think what he says, though, is like it's weird, though, to think that the universe would have had to be more complex than us.
Yeah.
To if it was an intelligent being back then, it would have had to be more complex than we are.
Right.
Back then, whenever things were not complex.
Right.
Seems counterintuitive.
And that sounds strange.
Yeah.
And I think that he has a point with that.
I think it sounds strange. Again, I'm putting on and taking off the religious.
Take his hat.
It sounds strange because we live in the era of evolution, of understanding evolution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We understand that there is an engine out there that is a counterexample to what I was just saying. Where there's an engine out there that creates a limited sphere of complexity when energy is added.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that kind of shoots that argument down. But there's something else going on here that is interesting. And it has to do with a couple of philosophers kind of proposing that the argument may actually be a version of the fallacy of composition. So here's what the fallacy of composition.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, here's what the fallacy of composition is. I'm going to try to give a couple of examples. Here's the first example, and this is a story that one philosopher, I believe it might have been Bertrand Russell,
Is this the brick on the wall one?
Nah, it's close. That's a simplified one. I want to give the more entertaining one. He said that, you know, imagine that you're getting a tour of a school, a university, and you're going from building to building, seeing all the departments, because, you know, maybe you're thinking of having your kid go there, or you're thinking of going there yourself, or whatever. You're getting the full tour. You see every building, every department. Let's say you see every office. Well, okay, at the end of the tour, when they ask, so are there any questions, it would be weird if you raised your hand and said, well, okay, you showed me all of these buildings of the university and all of the offices and departments of the university, but where is the university? That would puzzle the person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe they would figure out that, okay, you need to be in the philosophy department. But regardless, there's something wrong with that question. And it's that... So the fallacy of composition is basically the idea that it's okay to transfer properties of the individual components of something to the whole. It's a problem of transferring properties from parts to whole. So, yeah, Nick, what was the version you were thinking of?
The brick on the wall thing. I think I read, I don't know if Russell said it or someone else did, but you say when you look at a brick wall, all the bricks are small.
Right.
And they're all – the wall's made up of all these small bricks. Therefore, the wall must be small.
Right. And that's obviously ridiculous. Yeah. So how does – what does that have to do with the argument, the cosmological argument? Well, it's the idea that, you know, when we look at the individual things in the universe, we understand that there's this causal relationship between them. That makes it to where, yeah, if a ham sandwich showed up on the desk, we would wonder how the fuck did that happen. Mm-hmm. And when we look around at the objects around us, I see a variety of things. I see a stapler. I see Brittany. I see a microphone. I can have a story that tells me how those things came to be, mm-hmm. right? And it would be weird if there wasn't any. Okay, mm-hmm. Those are things in the universe. That is very different than saying that the entire universe shares the same trait of requiring an explanation, requiring a mm-hmm. cause. Since these things are causally related, doesn't just the first thing need to be explained, not everything, right? So really, isn't this looking for an explanation for what caused the Big Bang, which again is another cosmological, you know, puzzle? And since that is not something that has intelligence, etc., mm-hmm. that's just a bunch of matter, why is it that that requires that it be a person or all this stuff? And there's another problem with this. The principle of sufficient reason says that everything needs an explanation. And in order to solve this infinite regress, you introduce something, God, that doesn't require an explanation. Mm-hmm. So doesn't that mean that your original principle is false?
Yeah, it seems like it's cheating.
Right.
Yeah.
This doesn't need it because
it's a shortcut.
Right. Right.
Like, we can't explain it without a cause. Oh, let's just explain it without a cause then.
Yeah. Right. Like, by an uncaused cause. Mm-hmm. And look, I understand the definitional, like, appeal of that. That
God is the exception to the rule. So right. The rule says everything needs a cause.
Right. But I do
Ace
think.
Ace card.
What?
Ace card.
Yeah.
Trump card. Uncaused. Wait, let's not use that word.
Yeah.
Trump card. Ugh.
Right.
Still sore.
Right. Well, you see, God is the same but different. The thing is that I think there has always in the history of philosophy been a slightly unwarranted discomfort with an infinite regress. Mm-hmm. That you've got three possibilities for settling this. Just embrace the infinite regress, that there is no cause to all these things, ultimate cause. Not because they of things that just happened. By the way, the term for things that just happen would be a brute fact. Yeah. Things that have no explanation, they just are. Ham sandwich, right?
Mm-hmm. Turtles all the way down.
Well, no, that's the other, right?
Nice.
The infinite regress, embracing that is one option. A brute fact is another. Or the existence of a being that starts it all. Which that being would kind of be a brute fact as well, but just a different version. Those are the three options. So those are the problems that people have had with the cosmological argument, except it gets worse than that. And so by worse, I'm going to try my best to keep the hat on to mess with you guys, because I'm going to say that the enhanced version of the cosmological argument is a little bit better. Okay? And it's referred to as the Kalam cosmological argument. Okay?
I've heard of this one.
The Kalam cosmological argument really, well, first of all, Kalam is a term that is a shortened term for basically an order of Muslim scholars who, very much like Christian counterparts, decided that they wanted to use reasoned argument to support their faith. And so they kind of looked at the cosmological argument and enhanced it in the following way. What they said is, okay, let's really think about the idea of an infinite regress. An infinite regress, well, okay, no, let me start over again. Let's think about something that is an actual infinite, and this is the term that they use, an actual infinite. And what does that mean? Well, what this means is not just an idea that is infinite, like numbers. Numbers are a series, an infinite series, but those are ideas. No, we're talking about like an infinite, say, number of things, actual physical things. So the example that was given was, imagine a library that has an infinite number of books. This is not possible. And the reason why it's not possible, a sign that something is not possible, is when thinking about it results in fucking with your head.
Mm-hmm.
Paradoxes. So, okay, the library with an infinite number of books. Okay, let's say that you went to that library and you withdrew every other book. Common sense would tell you that the library now has half the number of books, but no, it doesn't. It has the exact same number of books it had before you checked out any books.
Infinite.
Infinite.
Even though you checked out an infinite number of books.
Yeah.
Yeah, infinite. What happens if you subtract infinity from infinity? You get infinity.
Nothing, right.
Yeah.
That's a big Dewey decimal system. Jeez.
It is.
Right. And
card catalogs.
I mean, you know, I could go on from there and list other paradoxes, but you guys already get it, right? Mm-hmm. The idea that something would be an actual infinite does not make any sense at all. Are we agreed?
No.
Agreed.
So, here's the next step in the argument. The past is actual. The past really happened. Whether you were there or not, it really happened.
I can accept this.
So, that means if an actual infinite cannot be, and the past is actual, then by syllogism, the past cannot be infinite. Right?
Yeah.
So what that means is that there must have been a beginning to everything. There, you cannot actually choose the infinite regress part. And so now they would say, now we've eliminated one of those three options. The actual infinite is not plausible. So now you are faced with either the brute fact
mm-hmm.
or the explanation of a being causing all this stuff. And again, all things being equal, which one makes more sense? At that point, it's pretty seductive to say that it makes sense that something would have started all this.
Or you could just say that it's everything cyclic.
That would be an infinite regress.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is not possible.
Okay.
So,
isn't the next bit like all you have to do is accept if the universe had a beginning, you just have to accept that it did begin.
Right.
Yeah.
Like if everything has a beginning, the universe did begin, therefore.
Yeah, I just don't see that it's seductive for it to be a being. I just don't know why you'd choose that.
I can see why it would be seductive, lacking, especially historically, I can see why it would be seductive.
Yeah.
Yeah, from a historical perspective, I think I could agree that it'd be more appealing.
Yeah. Because if you don't know, if you haven't studied cosmology and quantum mechanics,
if you haven't gotten to the point that we are now scientifically,
I'm sympathetic to how appealing that would be.
I'm actually going to say something controversial.
Go for it.
You guys might be surprised I'm going to say this. I'm actually personally sympathetic to the idea that it's a being.
Really?
Yeah. I just don't believe, because I need more evidence than that. I think that it does make a little bit more sense that it would be done by a being. So I guess in a way, you know, that makes me kind of lean, makes me a nervous deist. I think that it, if I, in my heart of hearts, if I really were pressed, I would say, you know, I think it probably is more likely that there's some alien species or some super aliens or something that started
that
things,
maybe we really are in a test tube.
Maybe we are.
It's likely,
but I would need more evidence than just that.
I feel like it's just as likely that a random piece of matter. It's just as likely in my mind that it happened randomly as some being made it.
Right.
You know, it's
through
just
naturalistic processes. I say in this question, I'm just agnostic. 50-50. I really don't have. I mean, I can see it going either way. So I usually don't make a conclusion of, like, it's a being. I just don't.
Yeah, I think can't I really have appeal to one or the other more.
Right. This is going to funnel into the fine-tuning argument, because I think the fine-tuning argument kind of feeds into the next step of this.
That's what I thought. And like I said, I think they build it on the ontological as far as it having to be a being, and they get that uncaused being there through that.
Yes, they do. So it makes sense to, if you're going to refer to a being that is the cause of all these things, well, by the principle of parsimony, right, the idea that the simplest explanation is the best explanation, it would make sense that it would be one being, not multiple. Because more than one, that makes your idea more complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
Occam's razor.
Right. And that being would be the cause of all the other beings. And that being would have to be, be at least very powerful in order to cause all this stuff. And so you're gravitating toward a version of God.
Right.
And so they would just say, well, we've got a name for what you just came up with. That name is God. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is an interesting argument. It's just not nearly enough. For me, the best counter argument to this is the ITSW, which is if then so what. So you guys heard that I kind of slightly favor the idea that it could be a being, but my response is if then so what. That doesn't say anything about it being a god, doesn't say anything about remotely about it being someone that it cares about what we do, never mind, you know, cares where you touch yourself.
So it's nothing about the nature of that being.
It's a cosmic.
Do you think
design?
That the nature
right?
of that being norm has to be something that was uncaused in order for this to work or not?
At some point, I think so. Or you're going to have to deal with an uncaused cause that is just an event.
And what if someone says, why can't the universe just be uncaused? Is that not satisfactory?
So, yeah, again, this is the
Where
idea.
Do you apply that?
This is the idea that you either have a brute fact that is not a person or a brute fact that is a person. And since, you know, again, I think that I would lean toward the idea of a personality because, you know, it just makes sense that a personality would be the creative force in making something.
I do
something.
Like the if then so what. Because
So now you have a cosmic really just, scientist. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, you're really just naming the thing.
Right.
But is a theologist, a Christian, you still got a long way to go.
Way. Yeah.
So he doesn't want me to eat shellfish.
Right. I know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Totally ridiculous.
It's like Chalmers said, there's a big distance between those two things.
Right. But I kind of entertain the idea that maybe we were the entire universe or the universes or whatever is an experiment of some beings.
Yeah, I totally
think that's
read
interesting.
Sci-fi all the time.
Now, I get that. And I'll say, Norm, that I think that this argument and the fine tuning one are probably two of the best theological arguments, honestly, for me.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. I think the fine tuning argument is a really, you know, a more precise wrap up of where this leaves off, too.
But I will say, though, that I am comfortable with it being a not a mindful being that does it, especially when you consider – I mean, I feel like we're looking at this end result, quote, our current result, I should say, and saying, well, look at all this intelligence and complexity. It must have been an intelligent being that wanted that goal.
Right.
Or started it. But for me – I guess it's weird because time is relative. I get that. But, you know, it took 14 billion years to get here, and it was all started off with, like, the simplest elements.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I don't see that as being something that people like an intelligent being. It seems like if you're an intelligent being with enough power to create the universe, you don't have to go the 14 billion year route. You can just go instant ham sandwich in front of you. So so to me, that makes it it makes me less inclined to think that it's a being because of all the evolution of the universe that would have had to have occurred.
In order to get here. It seems fishy.
And the idea that I'm sympathetic, but I need so much more.
Yes.
And there are a lot of spontaneous reactions that happen on a daily basis. So I can't I can't say that, well, this is because of the end result, this had to have been something. No, spontaneous reactions happen a lot. And over 14 billion years, maybe something.
So for me, it's just a
50-50.
But they need to be in a universe that has enough stuff for those things to happen. And yes, so you know the idea. So take one attribute of the religious version of God, right? Which is what we're really talking about. That there's intention in making all this for there to be intelligent beings. It's that does not make sense when you actually look at the size and diversity of the universe.
Right.
If I were a being that wanted to create life, I would not need to create hundreds of billions of galaxies, each with at least 100 billion stars, and all of these potential solar systems to create. I mean, that's just totally gratuitous.
Mm-hmm.
Makes no sense at all. So it makes a lot more sense that, life on Earth is a spontaneous reaction. And why are we here? Well, because we had to be somewhere. And there's a ridiculously high number of dice rolls. And so eventually this would happen. But I don't know if that necessarily cancels out the idea of, okay, well, when you look at, you know, the idea of the Big Bang and the creation of the universe, and you start thinking about what happened before that, it does kind of make me wonder, you know, the circumstances that brought that to be. Like, it does make me a little uncomfortable to think that this is just a series of explosions happening. I think it gravitates.
Doesn't make me uncomfortable. It just might be the way it is.
It might be, but again, what's fair is fair. When you start getting into the idea of there being multiple universes, I'm sorry, you need evidence for that, and there isn't.
Yeah,
you need a huge amount of evidence.
Only evidence we have is for one, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So
this whole thing starts getting very metaphysical at some point, especially whenever. It's hard for human minds. Like, we exist in this universe with these laws.
Yeah.
So we're talking about what happened before.
Right.
And it's weird to even try and conceptualize.
We shouldn't be able to figure
it out. We're finite.
Well, not only that, but then you're bringing all of our rules and our baggage from our universe and applying it to what would have been before. And to me, whenever you come to talking about theoretically what would have happened before, you can almost kind of do whatever you want. Like, for me, almost all bets are off. Because I don't see how any of the rules that we know now would have applied to the outside of the universe.
Well, and there's that theory.
And so it's weird for me to talk about, like, is there a being? I don't know. I mean, it seems like none of the rules that we think of necessarily would have to translate over to that.
Right. And that's an active theory. People are theorizing that the laws of physics as we know them now weren't applied pre-Big Bang. You know, it's just a theory.
Right. But it's a variable thing. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense that we would live in a time period now where things work the way they work. Mm-hmm. Because, that's
the way they work now.
We'll get into that when we get into the fine-tuning argument. Maybe.
Nice one, Nick.
I think maybe we should cover the fine-tuning argument next. Even though, we really need the teleological argument next. We need to shoot that down. The fine-tuning argument is kind of a pseudo-aversion of the teleological argument. It's kind of an enhancement. So we need that stepping stone.
Well, we've talked about the teleological argument before on the show, I believe.
Yeah, in the context of ethics. We did it briefly. We're gonna get into it more deeply next time. But, oddly enough, I think that we have covered this. This is a somewhat short episode, but I'm okay with that. We were
efficient.
We don't. I don't know. Does anybody have anything more to add to this? Or?
Yeah, it's kind of cut and dry, which is strange for philosophy. But
I think you could get more deeply into it, but you would just be creating more complicated wording for what we're talking about.
Yeah, you're chasing your tail.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that we need to. I don't know that there's. I don't think there's any more cheese at the end of this corridor.
Yeah.
So what do you think that comes down to, Norm? Like, either you're really falling to the camp of view of, like, you are more comfortable with it being a bean, or you're okay if it's not.
I think I'm more comfortable with it being some sort of person, but it's not anywhere near enough evidence, and I think that the absolute best answer to this is to say, I don't fucking know, and neither do you.
Yeah. So why are you more comfortable with the being? I just, out of curiosity.
Well, again, because I'm not, it's hard for me to wrap my head around the idea that something just happens without any cause and there's no mind driving any of it. If you're going to see something, you know, a series of very large things set in motion,
mm-hmm.
With some way of them working, it just makes better sense to me that there would be a mind
rather than a just a force.
Right.
See, that I get where you're coming from, but at the same time, I mean, you know, look at how an avalanche starts from like a little tiny beginning and then grows and spirals out of control into a big avalanche.
Tsunami.
There's not a series of minds up there creating the avalanche. It's just natural stuff that can happen happening.
It was Todd. Todd's skiing.
And
well, at the end of it, you...
That's why I'm comfortable without it being a being, because it seems like as we study the universe, natural things that seem complex happen all the time. I mean, the Grand Canyon was formed. It wasn't someone who started the river. It naturally happened.
Well, yeah, at the foundation, you have very simple components. You have fermions and you have bosons. And they account for... all the matter and energy in the universe and the forces. And we know that they spontaneously exist and cease to exist in a certain context in quantum mechanics.
Right.
And that's... But then, are we applying our physical laws now to pre-Big Bang? But I feel comfortable with it. I feel like that is the nature of how the universe has worked thus far.
Right.
So I feel comfortable saying no mind behind it. But
for me, the it's really just an all things being equal. If everything is absolutely equal and I have to decide which makes more sense, considering the complexity, diversity, and sheer size of the universe, all things being equal, the idea that it comes from a point of nothing, it just happens, or that somewhere down the line, somebody put matter in a space to do this. All things being equal, it just makes more sense that somebody did it.
I don't know.
Again, this is. I'm sure that this is. I don't know if this is irritating you guys or not, because you know I'm just as much as an atheist as you guys, and that's not enough to believe that I'm right. Because again, I think the real answer is nobody actually knows.
Yeah.
And how could we?
I think most people go with. That I just fall probably more on the side that Brittany is. It just doesn't bother me that it could be all natural. And the more I study things, it seems like natural things like that happen all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's.
On the scale of the universe, so you've seen the creation of other universes. That's really cool.
I would like to know.
It doesn't have to be on the scale of the universe.
Feel about the cosmic.
Well, you know,
argument.
Hang on a second, Chalmer. What?
I would like to know how the aliens who created us feel about the cosmological argument.
Yeah. Again, it really is just
an
all things
into that infinite regress again.
Sure.
I kind of feel like it does too.
Well, in the size and time are relative. You know, the universe is huge to us because we're finite things on one planet. You know,
let's look at it from this perspective. If you were to really, you know, imagine that you're really in a ship of the imagination like Cosmos. You can go anywhere in time and space.
Okay.
And you go back to the very beginning of the universe. Everything is shrunk down to a point. Somehow you are outside of all this, right? You're watching it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it really goes back to absolute nothingness. Don't you really think that would be truly bizarre?
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah,
of course.
I think it's insane.
Yeah.
And this is
fucking
why...
crazy.
I can't comprehend nothing.
Right. And this is why I guess I just think that there's got to be something else. Not got to be. That's way too strong. Again, all things being equal, that would be freaking mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Slightly less mind-blowing... in that ship of the imagination would be for me to see that that initial Big Bang is like a drop out of a dropper pipette of, you know, these totally unimaginable beings that are existing in some other way. And my my understanding of causality and time is all wrong.
That appeals to my coolness.
Right, factor. It's a cooler sci-fi
it's
thing.
Cool. I mean,
that would be slightly less insane to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm okay with the universe being just super insane, I guess. I mean,
well, yeah, I am too. Like at some point, I am too. I would not be. I would not be like this is impossible.
But
well,
I can see. I can see why something I cannot comprehend. Nothing. I can comprehend a pipette dropper.
Right.
I get that.
Right.
I get that.
So, but, you know, like I'm saying, this is not a positive argument. This is an argument that ends in a question mark. Like, isn't this a curiosity of our universe?
I agree.
That we have really have no idea about this stuff, and when you think about it, it gets weird. Mm-hmm. That's
this
really
is one of the deeper questions, I think, as far as, like, just mind-blowing things that break your brain when you try and think about it. Because to me, either you come back to the idea of something created everything or nothing did.
Right. Yeah.
And that seems to be the end of what we can say is like either because especially when you try and consider an idea like nothing. And like Brittany said, it's hard to even it might be impossible to do that. I mean, you're because no matter what you're saying, well, some being that didn't exist at some point created everything that does exist. That just seems weird.
But there was nothing.
Right.
And if you don't say it that way, then you're saying, well, then just the universe that exists at some point didn't exist and then it did.
Yeah.
And then
so
that also
that
goes
is equally as baffling to me. That's why I don't it's not appealing for me to say it was a being at all.
For you it's
for
even
it's a weird it's just weird to me it's all equally weird no matter what. And it wouldn't make it less weird if it was a being because then I would just say it would honestly almost make it more weird. I think that that's what Richard Dawkins says. It's like, you know, the universe if at least if it's a super simple beginning and it just starts like an avalanche tumbling down the mountain and getting bigger and bigger and more complex as it goes, fine.
Right.
But if you have a complex mind at the very beginning of everything already,
yeah,
like
he
it
come
took
from?
Us 14 billion years to get minds as complex as ours in this universe, so far as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But somehow if the universe had a more complex mind to start everything, that's just weird. And that to me is why a being is almost weirder than a natural way of thinking of it.
But then at the just to play the norms advocate, is you know, we're always fighting against in biology, we're fighting against something doesn't come from nothing.
Right.
Maggots didn't just poof out of that rotten
spontaneous
bread.
Generation
so
is not real. Yeah.
That nothing and then something, it also causes me to go, ah.
Right.
But then I get caught up if it was space aliens, then
where
did
they
come
from? Sure.
Yeah,
what's their universe
get back
like?
Into the infinite regress.
Sure.
If there's an intelligence, there has to be some framework of reality in which that intelligence exists. And then I have my same question. How does that being feel about the cosmological argument?
In my sci-fi version of the beginning of it all, I kind of add the and there's a term for this in movie making where I add the deus ex machina that is that those beings exist in a completely different way.
Wouldn't it be sad if we were in an accident and we're about to be autoclaved?
Well, talk to the sun about that in about 4 billion years.
Right? Maybe that's our autoclave.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, them existing in some different way gets around the infinite regress in that, you know, time works differently for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I recognize that somebody listening to this might think that, well, that, hey, that they might get angry. Like, this is what we believe in as far as God is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And that the problem I have with the person who believes in God, even if they're not religious, that's they believe in God, is an excessive amount of confidence. I'm not confident in my view at all. I'm just saying it slightly tips the balance for me, as in being, if that were the case, it would be slightly less surprising. But that's
more
nothing.
More of a warm fuzzy.
Yeah, that's nothing. That means nothing.
And for me, if it was a scientist, it would prove that there's not a God, because he's just a scientist.
Right.
He's not God.
I would say our appeal to nothing is on equally shaky ground.
Yeah.
Sure.
I would have to put myself partially agnostic.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I
agree
so
with Nick. I think, to me, both feel equally as weird.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
50-50.
I can understand both sides of that.
All right. Legit. So I'm the odd man out, and that's okay. But it's a I really do think that the only thing you can draw from this is the question mark. You have to look at this, and a reasonable person will say, this is a weird part of the universe that we live in, the universe where things are causally related, and we need explanations for things. And a little bit of understanding of someone who wants there to be a beginning, that seems to make some sense. But a complete bafflement of how someone can be confident in that their knowledge mm-hmm. of that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's weird.
That makes no sense at all. What is that noise now?
Somebody's running.
Is someone,
it's a bird.
It's a bird?
Oh, it sounded like someone breathing really hard.
Okay. Well, a heavy breathing bird. Bird sex.
That bird needs to quit smoking.
No, either that.
They're about to create some birds from nothing.
So, this is a puzzling argument, and it's okay to leave it as a puzzle. And I think that, that's probably a trait that a lot of religious people have, is they really don't like puzzles. Mm-hmm. They want there to be
an answer.
An answer for everything, whether they really have enough knowledge to draw that answer.
I think everyone wants that. That would be awesome if there was a set answer for every question I've ever had. Yeah, that'd be nice.
One of the more frustrating parts of philosophy. It's like I got into philosophy because I was like, hey, here's a way to find the truth, capital T. And a lot of times when I study it, the answer is we don't know.
Yeah,
we might
never
know.
I've become.
It might be impossible to know.
I've become perfectly comfortable with not knowing.
You have to, otherwise it'll drive you crazy.
That doesn't mean
or
I don't pursue it.
No,
right.
I mean, otherwise you've got to go with the ignorance is bliss thing. I mean, the more you look under the rock, the crazier it gets. So.
Yeah. That's
more rocks.
That's what I've found in my transitioning from teaching philosophy to teaching science. The more I learn about certain things, the more I become comfortable with that's freaking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, for example, the little, the centrioles in the cell that spread out.
Centrioles?
Right.
Yeah.
That cause the kind of fingers that come out when the cell is dividing.
Uh-huh.
Well, what the fuck tells them to do that? It makes no sense.
I know.
Right?
Yeah.
And when you see it, it's like amazing that they do that. Or like the walking part that's stripping the DNA to copy it.
Yeah, and it literally looks like a little shoot. And it's just just chemical interactions.
It's nuts. Yeah. So the more I learn about this stuff, the more I'm okay with it being a question mark. And I think that's the sign that's a difference between people who are science minded and people who are more religious minded. Is they're uncomfortable with there being a question mark, so they want to insert God or a being into that.
Right.
And then the confidence they have in doing that and making that move is totally inordinate. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we're good then.
Yeah, everybody.
Yeah.
As good as we're going to be.
The cosmological argument.
This episode turned out to be more fun than I thought it was going to be. I thought I was going to get mired in the terminology. I'm glad we didn't gravitate toward that.
No.
Yeah.
No. Right on. So I guess this will wrap it up for us for now then. Mm-hmm. So people out there listening, look, whether you've always been here or you just popped into existence, please think responsibly.